From the studios of WRPI in Troy, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when you mix the two, and where, like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'm here this evening with Phil and Lil, and it looks like Fongaboo has just joined us, so say hello, gang.
Hello.
Hi.
What up?
Okay. And we will be your hosts for the next hour and a half as we explore this world of the high tech. This is going to be episode number 32 of Little Brother, dated the 2nd of February, 2002. Stay tuned, Little Brother's right around the corner. All right, let's get this thing started. Let's see, before we get too carried away, I need to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in this show are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of WRPI staff, management, or the Rents. And Phil is doing stupid stuff here.
The Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, the Rensselaer Student Union. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal. Will you please take that piece of vinyl tape off your face?
There you go.
Okay.
I think we need another set of headphones.
Yeah.
Can't do that in here.
I don't think we got another place to plug one in.
Mm-mm.
I can't hear you at all, Phil.
Well, that's because he's not talking into the microphone.
Oh, Fong's got the mic.
He has the headphones, and Fong has the microphone. Logically, so that Fong can reply to the things that he's not hearing.
Yeah. All right. We'll get this one sorted out in just a second here, I think. Put Fong in the other at the other mic there. All right. Let's see if I can hear you.
Check one. Sibilance. Hey. Sibilance.
Hey, that sounds good. Okay. Anyway, let's get started. As usual, we're going to start with items from the Risks Digest. Oh, by the way, if you have an opinion or a review you'd like to throw in, please feel free to do so. The phone number here at WRPI is area code 518. You can see I've really not got it together this evening.
It's 518 what now?
518-276-6248. That number again, 518-276-6248.
Call now while the rates are low.
Love to hear hear from you. Also, you can, if you don't want to put your voice on the air, you can give us an email by sending your email to critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That's critter, C-R-I-T-T-E-R, @verizoneatspoop.com. And lastly, if you eat poop.com, that's critter, C-R-I-T-T-E-R, @verizoneatspoop.com. And lastly, if you feel so inclined, you can send us snail mail. The address is WRPI. Box 31, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180, and that'll get it to me.
Do you guys get much snail mail?
It hasn't happened yet.
Oh, really?
He likes to be prepared for contingencies, though.
Yeah. I was wondering if he did, if he had PGP signatures.
In case the internet...
he was a Boy Scout, or at least he used to read the Boy Scout manual, so...
In case the internet got broken, you have to have a backup plan. You know?
Yeah, always have more than one way of doing something.
Carrier pigeons.
Yeah. Hey, did you see... somebody actually put out an RFC on how to do TCPIP via carrier pigeon.
No. Seriously?
Seriously. I don't think anybody's actually implemented it.
Is there error checking?
I think that the
since carrier pigeons are extinct, no, I'm sure they
I think
haven't.
That the lag time
is there a parody pigeon?
I would expect so. But the thing I would be worried mostly about is the tremendous lag time and, of course, the packet fragmentation that would take place.
I want to trade stocks by carrier pigeon.
That might be a really bad idea, dude.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Make a good E-Trade commercial.
Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California has banned all wireless networks, including Microsoft's Wi-Fi, because of security concerns. Wi-Fi supporters say the technology is secure when it's been properly installed, but experts say that only about 10% of all users install them correctly. So, I guess this means that people are finally taking notice of the war drivers. Let's see. Wireless carriers including Sprint, Singular, and Seven, a startup, are putting together products that tunnel through the firewall to allow you to access the email, calendars, etc. on your desktop machine remotely from a wireless device.
Oh, that's nice.
But not to worry, since it conforms to the highest levels of transport security. After all, what could go wrong with a tunnel like this? The risks are apparent to everybody except for the vendors involved. Soon, business travelers passing through the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport will be able to access the internet at high speeds for free. Anyone want to send out lots of spam or launch attacks? Just go to Minneapolis-St. Paul. let's see. Oh, this is a cute one. It says, consumer beware. Are you really there? The potential risk was sent to me at work today. This was posted by Rob Graham. He says, at click glance of the site below, you may truly feel that you are viewing a drastic mistake at Microsoft.com or the evil doings of a disgruntled employee. As a web developer and consultant, quickly determined how it was done, simply passing a username and password to the true URL to display the page. However, a link contained within an email to the unsuspecting consumer bringing them to a site like this could be a disaster. The fault representation is an easy way to exploit information from consumers thinking that they're buying, subscribing, or requesting information from a company, when in fact it might be a scenario like this. Here's the URL he provided. It is www.microsoft.com/item=3DQ20934@hardware.no/nyheter/feb01/, and there's more after that, but the important part here is the @hardware.no that appears after www.microsoft.com. And of course, Fong's nodding his head, so he knows what this is doing.
I think I do. Are they exploiting Microsoft's server, like, in a dynamic way to bring up another URL?
Nope.
No, okay.
Nope.
Then I don't get it.
What they're doing here is they are actually sending the URL is actually a reference to hardware.no, not to Microsoft.com at all.
Uh-huh.
And the www.microsoft.com is sent to hardware.no as a user ID. And if you follow the particular URL I've got in front of me, and I'll post it up on my website because it's funny, but it's not something I can fully describe on the air. We'll just say that it's a page. It looks like one of Microsoft's how-tos from their knowledge base, and the basic subject can be summed up by the abbreviation RTFM. Some of you out there will know what RTFM stands for, and some of you will not. Basically, it stands for read the, and I think you can figure out the next word, manual. Anyway, let's see. Another similar item. This was related to something somebody else had said in the Risks Digest. This is from Peter G. Newman. He's saying that one of the things you can do if you want to throw somebody off the trail of where a URL is actually going is you can insert Cyrillic characters in the place of the usual Latin characters. For example, a Russian O and an English O look absolutely alike but could have radically different effects.
Can those be used to... Well, I guess I should know this question, but I don't. Can those be used to register domain names?
I was just going to ask you that question. I was hoping you would know.
I don't know for sure. I know there's been proposals for international standards.
I don't know. Let's see. Dirk the Daring submits an item about a waterline break. In Durham, North Carolina, a waterline break on early Saturday, January 12th, forced the closure of the city police department building and their 911 center. The water flooded a sub-basement and took out the electrical equipment and the backup power generators. Callers to 911 got busy signals or disconnects. Now, I suppose that's better than hold music. Until the temporary location at Duke University was online about 12 hours later, with dispatchers taking call information on paper, no computers. The risks. Number one, putting all the eggs, police department, and 911 center in one building. Two, putting critical electrical equipment in places where it can be easily flooded out and in the same building. and not having 911 services roll over to someplace else. For example, Cary, North Carolina, about 20 miles from Durham, has an agreement with the Wake County 911 Center that if Cary becomes unable to take a given 911 call, it automatically rolls over to Wake's 911 Center. Back up. Anyway, Tony Ford was submitting an item about something that's been done in England and Wales. The Daily Telegraph from January 26th carries a potentially disturbing report describing a new service, Money Claim Online, whereby individuals and law firms can issue most simple legal most. I haven't got enough caffeine in my blood, man.
I can get you a soda at the vending machine if you want. I'm going to head over there myself.
Yeah, I got one.
Get him a Mountain Dew.
I have a Metabolife in my pocket.
I just haven't pulled enough of it into my system yet.
Well, why don't you gulp some and give me that there story?
You know, okay. The best low-tech solution is an IV.
Yeah, here, take this.
Yeah. Okay, now let's see.
There's the second one on the page there.
Second one on the page. All right, I'm just going to... Today's Daily Telegraph, a quality UK broadsheet newspaper, carries a potentially disturbing report describing a new service, Money Claim Online, whereby individuals and law firms can issue most simple legal proceedings where a sum less than 100,000 UK pounds is claimed, approximately 140,000 US dollars, and enforce judgments via a web browser. The new service has been set up without publicity by the Lord Chancellor's Department, which runs the court systems in England and Wales. It seems that the system is accessible to the public now, although it has not been officially launched. People using this service are oddly referred to as customers, and there is a customer help desk. The newspaper report is also viewable at this Daily Telegraph link online. Oh gosh, it's another jumble of numbers.
Don't worry about that one.
But it's off of www.telegraph.co.uk. No details are apparent of what measures are taken to validate the identity of the claiming party or prevent other gross miscarriages of justice, but it would appear that the potential exists for significant trouble, even though the site warns that vexation litigants are not allowed to use it. These are people who have been who have abused the litigation system in the past to such an extent that they have been declared vexatious litigants, restricting their ability freely to issue legal proceedings. P.S. I am a lawyer myself, although I don't practice in this area, but I do work in-house for a large IT company. These comments are offered purely to a personal capacity. Tony Ford and Guilford. Here we go. Here's another royal chat session failed. This sounds amusing. A public chat session was scheduled yesterday between, on one hand, the Dutch Crown Prince Willem Alexander and his fiancée, Maxima Zorgida, and, on the other hand, 100 selected citizens. The session was made available for everybody to watch on a website. The server failed after a few minutes and did not come up again, so the rest of the session was canceled. According to several news sources, radio and TV news, printed press, KPN, who provided the server, says that the crash was caused by sabotage and that the site, which was designed for tens of thousands of users, received 3 billion, yes, 3 billion, hits. The story does not look very plausible to me. To deliver 3 billion IP packets, even short ones, in a few minutes takes something like 10 gigabytes per second connection into the server, and would require quite a powerful attacking machine with a comparable network connection or a concerted attack by tens of thousands of home PCs on modem lines. Actually, we talked about something like this in one of my classes for the A plus software. What you can do is you can actually utilize other people's server power if you can hack into their network.
Well, yeah, but I think it's... I actually don't think this was truly a case of sabotage. I think this is a case of cluelessness.
Right, absolutely. But they're saying that that's not possible, which is not true. It is. It takes a lot of effort, though. I also had a look at... Okay, this is not a www. It's just Internet Traffic Report, all one word, .com. Such a volume of traffic in a short time should cause some slowdown of other internet traffic in the networks concerned. I saw no noticeable performance degradation in any of the Dutch routers monitored by this site, nor anywhere else around the time of the event. Speculation in the media now goes that the site simply received more genuine hits than it was designed for, but not billions. Holland has 16 million inhabitants and could not cope, and that KPN is reluctant to admit their misestimation of the traffic. Does anyone have more information on what really happened? No. Yeah, I mean, it's not as if Prince Willem-Alexander has a huge, you know, international appeal.
No, but I mean, if there are, like if there are 16 million people in
all of Holland.
In all of Holland.
There are not 3 billion, according to the site.
Oh, 3 billion. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Well, I don't know who else may have an interest in Dutch royalty. I mean, I know a lot of Americans have this interest in the British royalty for reasons I still don't fully comprehend.
Yeah, but 16 million is still something like... something like 0.5% of 3 million, something like that. So, I mean, we're talking about way, 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 way more people outside of Holland taking an interest in this.
Well, also, there's the question of how exactly they were counting hits. I mean, if somebody tried to get in and couldn't, and they
tried again. Which I always do, because
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably what happened. Yeah.
In fact, I used to have a program in that I had written back years ago that was called Jackhammer, whose sole purpose was to do just exactly that. Keep beating on the server until it lets you in.
Oh, here's one about bouncing email. This is a classic, because, of course, it's happened to... Everybody's had it happen to somebody they know, where somebody sent an email somewhere where it wasn't supposed to go. The Strasbourg newspaper Dernière Nouvelle d'Alsace reports, in French, an interesting case of email forgery. The exact circumstances are not yet clear, but it appears that... A, an email was sent from the account of the mayor telling members of the city commission to vote in favor of a plan to extend a local hypermarket. The official public policy of the city council and the mayor is to oppose this extension. B, the mail to one member of the commission bounced because the recipient's name was incorrectly spelled. C, an assistant to Mayor Fabienne Keller, who has access to her mailbox, noticed the undeliverable reply and determined that the mail had been sent at a time when the mayor could not have sent it. And D, the general manager of the hypermarket is under police investigation for illegal entry into a computer system, forgery, use of forged documents, and attempted fraud. I see. That's a little different than I thought. Someone breaking into the system and sending out emails.
Well, yeah, and
and discovered because he misspelled someone's name.
Yep. Yep, yep. Well, let me see here.
Always use a spell checker. I know, that doesn't work on emails.
sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. Actually, I had heard of one case shortly after the Pentium chip had come out where somebody was trying to write an email on the subject of Pentia.
Yeah.
I think is the appropriate plural of Pentium.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain, though. Was trying to write an email on the subject of Pentia, and his email program had an automatic spell checker in it with an automatic replace with best guess. And so he sent out about 5 or 6 emails about penguins. Now, I don't know if that's a true story or an urban legend.
It could have come up with a lot worse things than that. Actually, I don't think Pentia would be right, because isn't Pentium the name? No, Intel's the name of the company.
Yeah.
But if Pentium's trademarked and Pentia is not, then they would go with Pentium.
Well, yes, then it would probably be...
I think you would
have
to refer to a Pentium chips or Pentium processors or something like that. I don't know, to make it plural.
But what if AMD came out with the Pentia?
Then I'm pretty sure that Intel would sue their butts off.
But would it work?
What to sue their butts off?
Yeah, can you sue the butts off of somebody for slightly changing the spelling to make it plural? I mean,
oh, you
does
can
Pentium
sue anybody
officially
for anything.
Use Pentia? Yes, but would they win?
I think they would win, actually. What's that?
As long as it's similar.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. As long as there's
currently a case, the makers of James Bond are suing Austin Powers over Goldmember.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So. They're changing the name of the film. It's no longer going to be called Goldmember because
So are they making a third one?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
pretty funny to name it Goldmember, though. They'll have to come up with another euphemism.
But I think that would be a similar case of similarity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give us a precedent.
Well, I mean...
Well, actually,
If it wasn't for one thing, you know, the fact that in both cases they'd taken and made it into a compound word... You know, it wasn't gold space finger, gold space member. It was gold finger, gold member. But a lot of cases, a lot of places set a guideline that they'll sue if there's some number of words similar between this brand and that brand. As an example, I would give the case a few years back when Hard Rock Cafe sued a school for setting up an incentive program called Hard Work Cafe. Which, of course...
They sued a school. You can't get blood from a turnip.
No, but you can get a lot of sap.
I mean, what are they going to do to pay for the lawsuit? Are they going to start, you know... Are they going to turn
bake
the hard
sales.
Work... They gonna, well, I was thinking they would turn the...
bake sale after bake sale.
They would turn the Hard Work Cafe into, you know, the sweatshop or something.
Stop bake sale.
Have all the kids make wallets and sell them.
Yeah, they did something like that. I don't know what they did exactly, well, but...
They'll start making Nike
thing.
Shoes.
But, I mean, it comes from the same sort of... It comes from the type of mentality that... These are the kinds of people that couldn't be cool if they had their flies open in a windstorm, you know? let's see. Paul Wallach is writing that last autumn, the propane company that fills his tank for stove, hot water, and dryer was taken over by another propane company. We learned last night, he says, when all of our gas-fired appliances stopped working, that some customers fell through the cracks during the acquisition. To wit, the new company wasn't refilling their tanks and was apparently relying on calls like ours to let them know when they had forgotten. They promised a delivery first thing in the morning. So about noon we called and learned a few additional tidbits. Apparently customers scheduled for regular deliveries from the old company had been silently changed to will call status by the new one, and no... The new company didn't believe it had any liability for interrupted service. The risk of mistranslating fields in an acquired database should be obvious, as should be the rule that any untranslatable values get flagged and or at least converted to the least damaging equivalent in the new system. There's also the obvious financial risk that customers won't want a company that's careless involved in delivering a commodity that is known to blow folks to bits when it's mishandled.
Yeah, they'll go somewhere else for their propane and propane accessories.
Let's see here. Yeah. Okay, BBC is reporting about Iceland using... face scanning technology. Now, this is a topic that comes up again and again here, and sometimes generates some controversy. So, if you want to join on this one,
well, so they're installing the face scanners for the, like, you know, 10 people that live in Iceland,
something like that. 518-276-6248 is the number to call if you want to throw your 2 cents worth in.
Do they have criminals up there? You know, I mean, it's kind of cold to commit crime, right?
No, Iceland's. Iceland's green. And
Iceland
Greenland's
is green.
Ice.
Greenland is ice.
Oh, I gotcha.
In Iceland, they speak Bjork.
But anyway, the article notes that a similar system was tried in Florida and abandoned after 2 months. The article notes, quote, "In my opinion, had this been installed at airports in North America last summer, it would have increased the chances of catching those criminals who hijacked the plane," said Keflavik Airport Police Commissioner Johan Bendixton. A recent report by the American Civil Liberties Union showed that over a two-month period, the software failed to identify a single person photographed in the department's criminal database. Instead, the software produced many false identifications. For Jonina Bjartmorts, I think that's the correct pronunciation.
Yeah, that person's from
Jonina
Iceland.
Jonina Bjartmorts, a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the Icelandic Parliament.
Bjartmorts.
The system was... has become a sure way of reassuring nervous passengers. We're at the westernmost tip of Europe and a gateway to America. We only have one airline, and we feel it was very necessary to invest in the technology, she said.
Why do they feel that they're threatened by hijacking in Iceland?
I don't know.
Even if they are the gateway to America from Iceland, I don't get it. I mean,
they go for big targets.
You know, big targets, heavy population, things that, you know, will really scare people, you know.
Well, anyway, she says it seems to have worked because flights coming and going from Keflavik Airport are generally full and passengers appear happy. One is tempted to say...
They appear happy.
Did they bother to ask them?
Well, they scanned their faces and they detected smiles.
That's it. One is tempted to say the usual risks. False positives and false negatives.
How do they know that that's connected to the higher customer happiness, you know? How do we know that just to make it appear that their customers are happier, they're not passing out, say, extra drinks or more cookies or something?
Now, I'm going to be quite frank with you, though.
Giving out another pillow.
I don't see...
warmer blankets.
Okay, I grant that Greenland is the westernmost portion of Europe. Why it's part of Europe, I have no idea. But I'm not going to get into a petty squabble over whether it should be part of Europe or part of North America, because that's irrelevant. I don't see it as the gateway to North America.
No, they're saying that that one airport is the gateway to North America from Iceland, aren't they?
Maybe the happiness were false positives.
Well, okay, I'd gotten the
impression. Yeah, maybe they're passing out, you know, Xanax or something on the flight, too. Nobody thought of that.
Just sneaking it in the food?
Yeah, mom's a little helper. Sneak a couple into the cocktails.
I got the impression that they were claiming that it was part of, well, the cocktails themselves may generate happiness, too.
Well, yes, I brought that up, too.
I'd gotten the impression that they were talking about this being the gateway to Europe, to Northern America, and of course...
Oh, no, that's not what I got. I mean, if I was going from Europe to America, I sure wouldn't go via Iceland.
Okay,
that's like
I've
how we
to
went
Europe
to
twice.
England from Albany via Chicago. You know, it's just bass-ackwards.
See, now, I've been to Europe twice. Never have I flown through Keflavik Airport. You've been to England how many, or to Europe how many times?
Oh.
Six total.
Yeah.
If you count
England
as part
of Europe. Have you ever been through Keflavik Airport?
No.
Okay.
No, we did go through Chicago for some mysterious reason. Thank you, Priceline.com. But no, we did never go. And we also went on a tiny, tiny little planelet from New York to here. It was great. Every time we hit any turbulence, the entire plane shifted to the left and right.
Oh, yeah.
It was better
jumper.
Than a roller coaster.
A planelet?
A planelet. Well, it was plane-like, but not quite large
plane-esque.
Enough.
Plane-esque.
It was plane-esque. And the flight was really, really bumpy, and everybody was very nervous. I thought it was great, though. It was like a roller coaster ride. Fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, most people don't go for thrills in their travel, but...
So in a plane like that, you know, it starts getting rocky. The compartments above your head should open up and, like, you know, drinks come down. Or like a hose with vodka.
You need those little pouches like they use on the in the space program. You know, you need those little pouches filled with some sort of alcoholic beverage.
Yes.
Yeah. I suppose vodka would probably be a good choice because it's got a fairly high density of alcohol per
yeah, it'll absorb quickly.
Or Everclear.
Especially since they don't... I guess they did serve snacks on that flight, although how they did it in like the 20 minutes we were in the air, I'll never know.
I know, isn't it amazing?
They just stand in the front, they throw peanuts at you.
Don't applaud, just throw peanuts. Let's see here. Anyway, as I was saying, the usual risks, false positives and false negatives, customers and management with a potentially false sense of security, and it will only pick up known faces. What if your hijacker is not known?
Well, I mean, it has certain risks if it were actually, you know, in an airport where you would expect to find a hijacker or a terrorist. I mean, since it is in an Icelandic airport, I don't think it has that much risk. But, you know, if it was out of LaGuardia or something, I would be concerned more, I suppose.
I don't know. At any rate, we're up to the top of the hour, so we need to take a quick break. And I need to tell you that you are listening to 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy. And Little Brother will return momentarily. And you are listening to Little Brother on 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy. Where we're going into the second segment of the program. and hopefully things will go a little bit smoother from here on out. I'm just not used to doing the show at this hour, I guess, and that's really messing with my brain. Okay. Rex Sanders submitted to the Risks Digest. He says, today I received the RSA Conference 2002 e-newsletter, Volume 2. Much to my dismay, this HTML-ized email had several hidden tracking features, including the classic one-by-one pixel GIF with a unique identifier encoded in the URL pointing to a company I'd never heard of. The risk is assuming that you can trust email from a conference and a company, in this case RSA Security, which emphasizes security and privacy. Interesting. Let me see here. And from that, we're done with the Risks Digest, it looks like.
Speaking of conferences, any word about Linux World? I think this happened this week.
No, that was last week.
Yeah.
Linux World? Was that last week? I thought that, there was the Linux Install Fest locally last week.
Okay.
I think that's what you're thinking
Then
about.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Don't pay attention.
I'm talking like Jacob Javits in New York.
Yeah, I'm going to have to admit to being a slacker on this one, and I just don't know the answer.
Yeah.
I'm gotten myself into the Linux world and found my nice little corner in it. I'm just kind of sitting there happy and leaving it at that, I guess.
Yeah, all I know about it, a colleague of mine went down and said it was kind of uneventful, and Linus did not show up.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I think Microsoft kidnapped Linus and is hiding him in a vault somewhere.
Don't know that either. Anyway, item from the BBC News. They're saying that the VHS video format is poised to make a comeback in a new version which produces high-def TV pictures. In a surprise move, Fox, Universal, DreamWorks, and Artisan are to announce the release of a raft of films in the DVHS format developed by JVC. Independence Day, Die Hard, U571, and the first two Terminator movies are all set for a high-definition DVHS release in the U.S. in June. But the move has been greeted with some skepticism by some other Hollywood studios, which are backing the DVD format. As far as we're concerned, DVHS is not a commercial product. The enormous success of DVD leads us to believe, both intuitively and practically, that there's a strong preference for a disc product, said president of Columbia TriStar, Ben Feingold. Sales of DVD players and discs have mushroomed in recent years, making it the U.S.'s fastest-selling consumer electronics product ever. But proponents of DVHS say that it's serving a niche market, and point to what they feel are advantages with the format. DVHS can fit more data onto a tape, and it can store high-definition TV images, which DVD cannot yet do. High-definition DVD technology is generally agreed to be some years away. JVC, the original developer of VHS, developed the new format and has also created a copyright protection system, big surprise, which it hopes will protect high-definition releases. Only DVHS players with the D-Theater technology will be able to play the new generation of high-definition DVHS cassettes. But DVHS players will be able to play conventional VHS tapes, which the company hopes will make the format more popular with consumers. The market for high-definition movies is still very small. The number of households with HDTV sets in the U.S. stands at about 2 million and is projected to reach 4 million by 2003. But JVC has hoped that hopes to sell 100,000 DVHS players, which currently cost $1,995 each during the year 2002.
You know, I think those statistics might be skewed, though. They're saying that DVDs are the biggest selling consumer electronic product ever.
Right.
Now, if they took DVD players and put them next to, say, electric vibrators.
That's true. I think there are some areas of the market that they may not have been paying any attention to there.
Well, the fact of the matter, I think the vibrator doesn't really qualify as a consumer electronics device. It's more sort of a motorized appliance.
I think it's rather small to be called an appliance, don't you?
It's electronic. Consumers
Although the earliest vibrators were not. The earliest vibrators, they were like tabletop models.
What about the one?
But now, that, you know, but now we've gotten quite compact.
It's called a washing machine.
No, actually, oh man, this is so weird.
With regular maintenance by the Maytag.
Honestly, I swear to you, I actually know the history of the vibrator in the 19th century.
Oh, I shouldn't have gotten started on this.
Weren't they in the century? They were like tabletop versions. It's
weren't
crazy.
They in the Sears Roebuck catalog, like as early as
yes.
the turn of the century?
Yes, they were. They were. women were thought to suffer from a physical illness, and they would use those to treat them.
Well, anyway, any clue as to what was prior
so they
to
have a larger market.
Prior to DVD, what was the most successful consumer electronics item? Was it VCRs?
I really have no. I don't have any info on that one.
Mm-hmm. Haven't as far as DVHS, hasn't that existed in Japan for a while? I always would read about these weird additional VHS formats that would like pop up in Japan, and we'd never hear of them here.
Well, I know they took a pot shot at DVHS some years ago, and they actually had a player with a full codec in it that you could use your DVHS machine to record analog content digitally.
Mm.
But I don't know what the I don't think this is. You know, my thought is I don't think this is going to catch.
Yeah, I mean I mean, I'm not trying to be pessimistic or anything, but it just doesn't seem to have anywhere to go. You know,
no,
I mean, HDTV is not a huge thing.
Not here.
And,
not yet.
And even yeah. once it is, well, you know, why go with VHS?
I mean, if you look...
I mean, right now, they may be the only people that are able to get that HD on, you know, data onto the tape, but I'm sure they'll sort that out on DVD before long if HDTV ever actually picks up.
If you look at the success of DVD and as to why it is such a success, I think the high definition of the video on it is probably low on the list as to reasons for success. I think you know, the fact that it's nonlinear and the fact that most often they're loaded with all sorts of extra features and such, that's what's made it such a high selling point to consumers in America.
Now, I don't know if the non-linearity is such a big selling point, simply because of the fact that I see most cases where I've seen somebody using a DVD player, they put the movie in, they select the play button or the play option from the menu, and then they sit and watch the entire movie straight through, unless it's something that they're absolutely fascinated by, in which case, of course, they've bought the DVD rather than rented it, and
they've bought the DVD, they've bought the book, they've bought the game software.
Yeah,
I would certainly argue.
The T-shirt.
Case.
Yeah,
I'd certainly argue that people aren't going to go for a tape-based format again, though. Going back to having to forward and rewind when they want it.
I absolutely
jog
agree
around.
With you there.
But yeah, I don't know how it wasn't such a big reason for DVD. You know, maybe. DVD success, but
well, there's many advantages to going to DVD, but that's the thing. The people that do go for HDTV, I think, would do it for the, you know, visual definition. Mm. But I really don't see them going back for even if HDTV picks up, I don't see them going to DVHS.
Well, as it stands right now,
you can get an
image out of a DVD player that. It's not HDTV, but it is EDTV.
Pretty good.
You know, it's beyond the capability of an NTSC monitor or a standard TV.
Do you have specs on that?
What do you mean? Do you mean like what
number
the format
of lines?
Is? Yeah, it's a 480 format, but it's a 480 interlaced.
Okay.
Instead of, or I'm sorry, a 480 progressive instead of a 480 yeah. interlace. It already has widescreen built into it, you know. And this is the reason why you get a DVD player. You look at the back of them these days. Even the cheap ones, they've got the component video outputs on it, so you can plug it into a high definition TV monitor. You know,
that's the only reason why I'd want an HDTV, like a plasma screen, just use it as a computer monitor. That's the only purpose I'd want it for.
I don't
giant
know.
Giant wall size.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen some.
Some video games, you know.
Some dirt cheap framed or line doublers come out lately. One place I've seen has got them for $150 for a line doubler.
Mm-hmm.
that's unheard of. They're usually 600 at the very least. More often, they're in the multi-grand range. And basically, what a line doubler will do is it'll take an NTSC image and it'll upconvert it to HDTV frame format. Now, you don't get any additional information out of it, obviously, but you do get a much smoother picture. And for you can get these for $150 now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right off the bat, there's a benefit to getting a high definition monitor. You know,
plastic makes it possible,
or something like that.
But it, I mean, it's roughly the same experience as watching a movie on your computer, where you have a progressive display anyway. I would say it's
pretty near exactly the same experience.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the fact of the matter is we've just been working with such an archaic method of display for decades now in terms of television.
Oh, yeah. Well,
NTSC and PAL.
The NTSC format is in turn bound to its black and white predecessor, you know, as far as the number of lines displayed, the amount of stuff you can cram into a line, and how many frames a second you get, and the fact that they're interlaced is all... dates all the way back to half a century ago plus.
Mm.
You know? So, I don't know. Oh, let's see. CNN has an article saying that a defunct 3.5-ton satellite could tumble from the sky in an uncontrolled descent and scatter debris over a swath of the planet within hours, over a wide swath of the planet. The aging spacecraft would re-enter the atmosphere as early as 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time Wednesday or as late as 7 a.m. on Thursday, engineers with the space agency predicted. Fragments from the Extreme Ultraviolet Explorer could scatter along a trail extending up to 625 miles, but no one yet knows exactly where.
And if you're lucky enough to find a fragment, you could sell it on eBay.
Hey, maybe our friends at Taco Bell can put another target out in the middle of the ocean. I don't know. Unlike the retired Compton Gamma Ray Observatory, which NASA safely guided from the sky into the ocean in 2000, the Extreme Ultraviolet Explorer has no onboard steering system. Yet NASA scientists said there is little risk because most of the doomed satellite will burn up in the atmosphere. Still, even a little piece the size of a grain of sand coming at you fast enough will hurt like hell.
They don't have any idea where exactly it's going to land, though, right?
No, they don't really. It doesn't seem like it anyway. The probability of a few EUVE pieces falling in a populated area and hurting somebody is very small, said Ronald Mammoth of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, which originally manned the EUVE mission. It's more likely, he says, that the small pieces will fall into the ocean or fall harmlessly to the ground. Nevertheless, an estimated 9 steel or titanium pieces could survive re-entry, ranging from 4 pounds to 100 pounds.
After re-entry, 4 pounds?
After re-entry,
pounds?
Yeah.
Hmm.
But before cooking.
I don't want to get hit by one of those pieces, do you?
Well, 3/4 of the planet is ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something.
That I think is why they're talking about probability.
Yeah, so at the very
here.
Least, it's only going to like hit a whale or something.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, you know, it might hit Iceland. But I'm just full of Iceland.
There goes
bashing
the gateway.
Today. The gateway to North America, Iceland.
It's the gateway to North America. You hit
it's the
Iceland.
Gateway
you
to
hit
fun.
North America, and that's an act of war, right?
Well.
When was the last time it happened?
Know.
I don't know.
So that's this Wednesday.
When
it's
did
happen.
Anything hit Iceland? I mean,
it's
other
must
than
see
Bjork.
Debris.
Other than Bjork, when was the last time something hit Iceland?
It is expected to begin disintegrating when it descends to within 50 miles of the surface and then re-enter the atmosphere approximately 7 hours later. The re-entry window ranges from as far north as Orlando, Florida, and as far south as Brisbane, Australia. Scientists monitoring the EUVE will not know the reentry point until about 12 hours before impact. At least they got 12 hours to get people out of the way.
Yeah. Besides, it's not our hemisphere.
Launched in 1992, the satellite lasted much longer than its intended 3 years. It studied the extreme ultraviolet spectrum for NASA and later for the University of California, Berkeley, before it ceased operations a year ago. I don't know.
So overall, it was a grand success, and now just look out! Everybody duck.
Going out with a bang.
Yeah, but how many, like, thousands of satellites are up there, you know, and how many hundreds are probably in a decaying orbit right now?
Probably most of them. No, I mean, we're talking about a universe that's basically ruled by entropy, so these things have got to kind of be in decaying orbits just to begin with. But most of them have got some mechanism in place to control that orbit. Usually some small fuel tank and some thrusters, and they can give a little burst here and a burst there to put themselves back into orbit, back into their proper orbit at any time.
Until they run out of fuel.
Until they run out of fuel. And I guess this guy ran out of fuel. Because if they... If they're not able to make a controlled re-entry, that's...
Well, they said that, yeah, it doesn't have controls on it.
Exactly.
Unlike the other one, so...
Exactly.
Maybe it never had that little fuel tank.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know.
But she's coming down now.
It seems kind of silly to put something like that up there without one.
Well, sure, in modern terms, but when did they put it up?
92. They didn't know better back then.
They should have known better. You're right.
That's my point.
Yeah, they should have known better by that time.
Okay, let's see. I spoke earlier about the airport running a free wireless internet service. Well, this is more information on that. This came out of the Star Tribune. They're saying that soon business travelers passing through Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport will be able to sit in the coffee shop and use their laptops or handheld devices to access corporate networks and the internet at high speed. Here's how much it will cost the airport. Zero. The corporate traveler? Zero. Joe traveler? Zero if he has a wireless laptop or handheld, otherwise $6 to $8 for the day. It's a good deal for the airports and for travelers, said Brian Peters, assistant manager of airline affairs for the Metropolitan Airports Commission. And if wireless use catches on, the airport will make money, 30% of the Concourse Communications Group's revenue at the airport.
Well, geez, golly, the next time we go to Europe, we'll have to go via Minneapolis.
So let me get this straight. You can just go into the airport with a laptop with a wireless link and then just use the internet?
Mm-hmm.
That's the deal.
That's great. I mean, you could take a laptop with, say, Linux on it, walk in there, and you could be totally anonymous.
Can you say TCP dump?
I mean, no one would ever be able to trace. Like, if you did something illegal on the net, no one would be able to trace who you are.
That's a pretty obvious risk there. At least it's obvious to me. I don't know. Maybe.
Are they just aiming to provide this as a courtesy?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I can see some people going in and being rather discourteous about it.
Well, just because they're nice to you.
Concourse Communications, based in Springfield, Mass., is managing the project and says it's hired IP Pass, a Redwood Shores, California company, to install the system and promote the service to corporate customers. Corporations would pay setup and user fees for their travelers. A byproduct of this arrangement is that non-business travelers who have a laptop with a wireless card can surf the internet for free. The Twin Cities Airport will be the first of five major airports to get a uniform wireless network. Concourse has contracts to install wireless networks at Newark, JFK, LaGuardia, and Detroit Metro. The Twin Cities Airport was chosen because of a high number of passengers who travel through the airport, said Dick Snyder, Senior Vice President of Business Development for Concourse Communications. In 2000, the airport ranked as the 13th busiest in the world, according to Airports Council International. The airport also was chosen because it has a reputation of being innovative, said Michael Moore, business developer for business development management for IPass. Airport managers identified early on that this was a service that they wanted to offer travelers. They've been one of the most aggressive, he says. Once operational, the IPass system will make connecting to corporate networks simple and uniform for travelers no matter where in the world that they are. IPass acts as the intermediary between the internet service provider and the corporation. It negotiates wholesale bulk rates with ISPs such as Sprint and WorldCom, which it then offers to corporate customers. Installation of the network began in late November, and it's on the schedule to be operational March 1st. The project will cost about $250,000. In addition, the system will include 15 existing internet kiosks in the main Lindbergh terminal that will be converted to wireless kiosks. The kiosks are intended to be used by travelers who don't have a laptop and want to pass some time surfing the internet. They can insert a credit card and pay a daily fee estimated between $6 and $8. Travelers who want access to the internet via laptop or handheld will need to have a Wi-Fi card installed in their computer. Some computers are sold with such cards. The idea is that one day wireless will have the same ubiquity as the cell phone, said Peters. In the meantime, the airport will be way ahead of the game. I don't know. At any rate, we're back to the bottom of the hour, and we need to take a quick break for station ID, and little brother will return. Okay. Well, seems like we've got a hockey game coming up next, and they're in the process of trying to set up for that. So what we're going to do at this point in order to smooth the transition over is we're going to say goodbye for this week. We'll be back next week at 5:30, and we'll just run some music until the hockey game comes on. So keep it tuned here to 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy. And that's a wrap.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.